But first, I have an immediate question to Sven on this last issue. Why do you think this is an, this idea actually developed in California? What are the circumstances that something like this, that this idea that sounds very thrilling and fascinating, and we were very anxious to see how it plays out in Denmark and in Israel, what are the circumstances that actually fostered this kind of development? That would be my first one. And the second one, more technologically orientated. When you talk about low carbon or zero carbon electricity, you know, in Germany and in Europe in general, nuclear power is a big issue. And I know in California as well. How is that? How does that come into the picture for a project Better Place?
So the first question was, how did it start? Shai Gassi, our founder, was number two at SAP, the you guys know, I'm pretty sure you all know who SAP is, and on the way up to be number one, and he was asked at Davos as part of this Young Global Leaders Forum, how do you make the world a better place? Hence the name, how do you make the world a better place? And he has, being an Israeli-American, is particularly interested in the issues facing Israel and the world and climate change, and he actually tried to figure out a way to solve it, I mean, a real way, and looked at biofuels, no go. Hydrogen, what a joke. Sorry, that was my personal opinion. I didn't mean to say it like that. But he looked at fast charging of batteries, and he looked at putting in very large batteries, and then had a whole bunch of Stanford business students try to figure out a way to make it work, to develop, to take a mission, just like the ice cream company Ben & Jerry's had a mission. They didn't like say, we want to make money selling ice cream. They said, we want to make a great ice cream. And Shai's mission is to end our oil addiction. But to do that, he had to do it in a way that made economic sense. And the reason why we do battery swapping, the most expensive component of all of this is that battery. What we do by having it roughly 160-kilometer range, we get the most driving out of the battery. And when you need that additional range, that's when the battery exchange station comes in. The battery exchange station is much better than a hybrid vehicle from a cost perspective. The added cost of that battery exchange station is roughly $100 versus a couple thousand dollars per vehicle for a hybrid system, and it doesn't end the oil addiction. So it was a personal challenge. And we have a, like, it's our mission. It's not to make money, but we have to make it so that people will adopt it. That is, the costs are less for everyone here. And because the battery costs per kilometer plus the electricity costs, including that green power per kilometer, are much less than the petrol prices per kilometer. And it, there is more than enough margin there to be able to install those 2.5 charge spots per vehicle. Want to address the carbon-free too?
Sure.
So the carbon-free aspect, just like I said, Starbucks said, we want to sell coffee, and we want to give you a good cup of coffee. I'm not advocating that Starbucks does that, merely that they decided to use paper cups. And if you look at all of their costs in their business model, the cost of the stores, the cost of the coffee, the cost of their employees, I'm going to use a chemical engineering word here, the cost, the additional cost of going from styrofoam to paper compared to all those other costs was doodly squat. It was really small. And the same thing when you look at our costs, using carbon-free electricity, in California we can buy it on the open market. We can get a tariff just for carbon-free electricity. In Denmark, obviously, we're partnering with that has this huge amount of wind, and we can see the same things happen. That we can actually have our consumers, we know how much demand we're going to have for these vehicles. We can go to a renewable generator, someone wanting to put in a wind turbine, and we could say, we'll help you go to the bank to put them to get the money to put that up.
So we see that this fascinating idea is developing without a lot of policy incentives, I understand, although you have to take into account, well, you do this not in California, but in Denmark, Israel, but in California you have a longer tradition of peak management, of high electricity prices, or high high interest of cutting the peaks on the daily electricity market. So the idea of mobile batteries and mobile peak management is something very, very thrilling to the Californian market. I assume so too. Wolfgang Lubeck, is this something were you talking in 1992 in a similar way on this new on the smart car concept as we hear today on this electric mobility idea? Is that something that you in retrospective can relate to?
Not quite. Well, nevertheless, let me try it in German.
Yeah, sure.
I think Sven's idea, or the idea of maybe Shai Agassi, I don't know. Sorry, again in German. That's it's a very complex thing.
Es geht auch auf Deutsch.
Sorry. Wir sprechen ja hier über eine Idee, die aus sehr, sehr vielen Komponenten besteht. Wir sprechen über eine Idee, wo die Frage offen ist, wie entwickelt sich die Batteriekapazität. Wir sprechen hier über eine Idee, wo mir zumindest unklar ist, ist das Handling des Battery Exchange, ist das wirklich praktikabel? Wir sprechen von mehreren 100 Kilo. Ich glaube nicht, dass mit den 5 Minuten das realistisch ist, obwohl das vielleicht unwesentlich ist. Wir sprechen von elektrisch getriebenen Autos. Wir sprechen von der Verbindung elektrisch getriebener Autos und carbon-free Herstellung von, also nicht, also fossile Erzeugung von Energie. Das ist ein Riesenpaket, von dem alle Einzelschritte derzeit nicht wirklich gelöst sind. Ein Elektroauto zunächst mal, wenn wir nur über das Elektroauto sprechen, bei herkömmlicher Betriebsweise, und das müssen wir jetzt erstmal ins Auge fassen, emittiert genauso viel, fast genauso viel, zum, je nach Mix in Deutschland sogar mehr CO2 als ein konventionelles Auto. Wenn wir jetzt diesen Mix ersetzen durch einen Carbon-Free erzeugen, dann ist die Frage, ist das Auto der richtige Platz, nicht fossil erzeugte Energie zu nutzen? Wird diese Energie nicht anderen Elektrizitätsnutzern weggenommen? Wie ist da die Bilanz? Das kann ich derzeit nicht so genau beantworten. Ich fürchte, sie ist negativ, weil nämlich, und da komme ich wieder zu meinem eigentlichen Anliegen, das Thema mir näher liegt, was kann ich jetzt tun? Jetzt unmittelbar, nicht in 10 Jahren, nicht in 2020, 30, 40, sondern jetzt. Und was ist dann die Vorbedingung, um auch Ihr Konzept überhaupt machbar zu machen? Wir brauchen dann, wenn das Auto leichter ist, wir brauchen dann keine Batterien, die 400 Kilo wiegen wie Tesla. Wir brauchen Batterien, die vielleicht nur noch 100 Kilo wiegen. Dass dieses Downsizing auf der ganzen Linie kommt einer ganzen Palette von Innovationen zugute. Einschließlich, ich habe es eben sogar gesagt, einschließlich sogar der Benutzung in begrenztem Umfang von Biokraftstoffen. Das wird alles möglich. Das kommt innerhalb der sichtbaren, kurzfristigen Reichweite, wenn erstmal die Dinge angepackt werden, wie die wir jetzt können. Was mich an dieser Diskussion immer aufregt, ist es nicht die Frage, ob irgendeine Technik geht, ob sie nicht geht, sondern es ist, dass immer wieder, genauso wie bei Fuel Cell, bei Hydrogen von BMW, Fuel Cell von Daimler, die ganzen alten Konzepte, dass immer wieder Projekte für das Jahr 2020, 30 diskutiert werden mit der Absicht, das ist jetzt eine Unterstellung, mit der Absicht, das, was man jetzt tun könnte, eben genau nicht zu tun. Das heißt also letztlich, um den Status quo zu bewahren. Okay. Also diese Idee ist sehr, sehr faszinierend, vor allen Dingen das nicht mehr aufladen müssen an der Batterie, sondern den Batteriewechsel, das ist natürlich ein technologischer Sprung, aber auch das wäre sehr viel einfacher, wenn wir andere Dinge, die wir jetzt machen können, direkt machen und die vordringlich diskutieren.
Okay, so there are some questions to the technology itself, and I know Sven has also bigger presentations where he's covering these issues. But Sandrine, what are your thoughts on this issue of energy efficiency and using electromobility as a big part in that for car mobility?
I think what we're getting from this is that there's a need for a package of solutions. And I fully agree with you that there's a lot of hype in technology innovation. Fully agree. Most of what we can do today is not sexy enough for policymakers to look at it and do it. And that is one of the key issues that we're confronted with at the European level and at the member state level. In the energy side, I also fully agree with your statement on stationary versus transport. The problem is that most of our growth in CO2 emissions comes from the transport sector. So what policymakers have done, and also our addiction to oil, is linked to that. So we have thought, okay, let's immediately look at substitutes to oil in the transport sector. But in many cases, it doesn't make sense. Biofuels is a perfect example. Use biomass for stationary source applications and you'll get much more CO2 reduction than turning it into biofuels where you're actually using energy to turn it into biofuels. So where is the problem? From a policy perspective, I think the key problem is we do not put together the comprehensive analysis of our energy needs and our energy use and our energy demand. And we don't look at how that fits within the current infrastructure and how we can change it. Here in Europe, why are we focusing on biofuels for transport? Well, the simple answer is common agricultural policy reform. No one will tell you that that's the right reason, but that is. We took the subsidies from common agricultural policy and we gave them to biofuels. Did anybody actually look at the CO2 impacts or the proper energy security that we could get from looking at biomass and stationary rather than in biofuels? No. Did we do a full assessment of our needs in Europe with regard to energy and where we could best switch to low carbon options? No. This is what we should be concentrating on and then putting together a package of solutions, whether it be electrical cars, whether it be a variety of other energy efficiency, more consumer-driven or citizen-driven changes in society. But no one has done that comprehensive analysis at the European Commission level or elsewhere. And in fact, funnily enough, the only ones that are doing it are the International Energy Agency. And yet we know that what they're actually doing is not necessarily representative of us really wanting to change society, but more of the same in terms of the scenarios. So I fully agree with you, and I think this is extremely important, and this is how we bridge the gap between the European and the US policymakers. This is the type of discussion that we actually need to have.